I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding, and I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, our guest is a guy who used to compete as a teenager against some of the best teenagers in the country back in the 1980s when teenage bodybuilding was really tough. His name is John Taylor, and John won the overall at the Teenage Mr. USA contest in 1980, and he beat Jeff King. So he also beat Paul Jean Guillaume. He had beat some really great bodybuilders who went on to have good careers as pros. So we're going to talk to John today about his old school training back in the late 70s, early 80s. And then John also went on to win the Collegiate Nationals, which I think was the first one the MPC ever held in 1982. So John had a really good early career, and then he kind of quit bodybuilding early and went on to just have a regular career in the fitness industry and got married, and now he's actually retired. So we're going to talk to John Taylor, Teenage Mr. USA, in a minute. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So you can call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com, and tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right, we got some emails from last week's show with Dr. Ellington Darden. Put it on YouTube. And I got some really, really good responses, so I'm going to read those in a second. Before we do that, though, I do want to mention my John Hansen Fall Fitness Challenge, which is actually going to start this week on September 28th. We might be able to give it a few more days, like up to October 1st, but I do want to get it started this week. And this is a 12-week transformation challenge where you will change your body in the period of 12 weeks. So this will finish up right at the end of the year on December 21st, the week of Christmas. So this is going to be the challenge to get into shape before 2020 ends. And as I mentioned last week on the show, this is a really great opportunity to get into great shape now before the new year starts. And that's usually when most people want to get in shape, is after January 1st when they make their New Year's resolutions. But I am offering, this is my third fitness challenge of the year. We did one at the very beginning of the year last January. And we also did one over the summer, which just concluded a couple weeks ago. And now we're going to do one for the fall. So again, that will start this week. So if you guys are interested in joining, all you have to do is go to johnhansenfitness.com and you can register right there on the website. After you fill out the questionnaire, I will send you a personalized training and diet program. So this will be for your goals and it'll be for your body, your schedule. And it will get you in shape in 12 weeks. And then I will follow up with you every single week to see how you're doing, to see how your workouts are going, to see where your waist is at, where your weight is at. And I will work with you as a personal coach to get you in shape over that 12-week period. So we've had some really, really great transformations so far this year. And I'm really proud of some of the progress that the people who have joined the fitness challenge have made. And so I'm looking to do it again starting this week. So go to johnhansenfitness.com and you can sign up there. And I will also have, it should be up this week, all the winners from the summer fitness challenge. So you'll be able to see what I was able to do with these guys as far as what kind of workouts I designed for them and how I was able to personalize it and their nutrition also. in order for them to get in shape. And our top three winners really, really made some incredible progress. So whoever the top three people are who make the most progress between their before and their after picture and also their measurements, they will win prizes, which will include all the books that I've written, which includes the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1, the MP6 Workout, and the Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. And then you're also going to get my DVDs, which is the Real Muscle DVD and the Bodybuilding Seminar and Competitions DVD. And in addition to that, Old School Labs, who I still work for, is going to offer supplements for all three of the top winners. So that is what's going on. And so I hope to get you guys to go into that. We've got a lot of people who listen to the show entering. So if you want to enter, just go to johnhansonfitness.com. It's not too late. You can join up anytime this week, and I'll write up that program for you and get you started right away. All right, now let's go to our emails. If you want to email me about anything that's on the show, anybody you want to hear, or any of the shows that we did, any comments you have, you could just do that by going to naturalolympia@gmail.com and send me an email, and I will read it on the air. All right, our first email here is from Jim Kerr, and Jim said, John, great interview with Ellington Darden. I highly recommend his Nautilus Bodybuilding book. I was particularly interested in his comments about Arthur Jones. I was able to meet Arthur Jones in Chicago when I was a kid. Jones had a TV show at the time called Wild Cargo. Jones had Big Snake and Alligator Show at the old International Amphitheater in Chicago. Jones was absolutely fearless around the animals, and he had a very commanding presence. It would be great to hear an interview with Boyer Coe and Ellington swapping stories. Yeah, we might be able to do that. That's a good idea, Jim. I also got an email here from Roger, and Roger said, your videos are amazing. From 1963 through 1970, I attended every IFBB show held at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. I saw Johnny Maldonado beat Eddie Giuliani, Alan Keane beat Frank Zane, and Don Howarth beat Frank Zane. They were quite similar, but Zane had better legs and Howarth had wider shoulders and bigger arms. Howarth looked more impressive on stage. I saw Scott win Mr. America, Universe, and both Olympias. I saw Draper win the Mr. America and the Universe, and I was disappointed when he didn't compete in the Olympia that night that he won the Universe. The 1966 Mr. Olympia, Scott brought the house down, and all you saw were his massive arms and delts. They were blinding. Sipes was massive and muscular, but not a total package. He did not have a great V taper due to developed obliques. Sergio was fantastic. Great legs, huge arms, and tremendous V taper. When all four came out to the pose down, my eyes kept going back to Poole. Great legs, good arms, fantastic back. He was the complete package. Massive, muscular, cut, and tall. Each muscle was rounded and stood out in bold relief, and his traps were fantastic. The muscles on his back and midsection were like little biceps. You could see them popping out of his skin. Scott started to look a little blocky to me by comparison, and I wondered if Poole was going to upset things that night. I watched the pose down on your video, and I had to take a deep breath when that evening came all rushing back to me when I was just a young, impressionable teen. Then it hit me, and I was jolted by the sudden realization that it was a real moment in time and that I was watching four men who were the very essence of power and life, and that they are all gone now. Shocking. Next time I'll tell you a fantastic true story as to where I was sitting in the Brooklyn Academy watching Scott announcing his retirement. You will be amazed. Keep the videos coming. They are the best. And God bless and keep up the wonderful Rick Drayson. Roger. All right. And I contacted Roger. I said, oh, I should have him on the show since he saw all those contests. I would love to get his viewpoint as a fan, even if he was a young guy. That would be amazing because he really had a great email here where he really described everything that was going on. So he said he would love to come on. So hopefully we'll be able to get him on pretty soon. All right. On my Facebook page, I put the interview with Dr. Ellington Darden, and Pete Fancher, my friend from Florida, said, I have known Ellington for almost 40 years. He's a great guy. I have to get caught up on all these great interviews. Nicholas Daver said, one of a kind. His knowledge about weight loss and building muscle is second to none. Mark Martinez, our friend who was on the show before, said, good interview. I enjoyed Ellington's stories and memories. Ed Bartosik said he wrote some great books. Bob Kaiser, my friend from Powerhouse Gym, said, I met him in the mid-80s when I called on Nautilus, headquartered in Dallas. And Walter Vandebraden said, I'm going to listen to him. All right. And as I mentioned, I did put the video version of our interview up on YouTube. So if you're on YouTube, just check out my page under my name, John Hansen. And I just put this up a few days ago, but we've already gotten almost 2,000 views, which is pretty good. And I got a lot of comments, and most of them are really positive. So I want to read these comments. The Spritz said, John Hansen consistently delivers the best bodybuilding interviews on YouTube, period. Ronan said, another top-class interview, guys. I listened to it on a podcast app earlier. I just wanted to drop a comment here. Atlantarama said, that was a great interview. It's fascinating to hear about the legendary bodybuilders from the 60s and 70s when the contests were fun and before bodybuilding became so business-oriented. Samuel said, I learned how to expand my rib cage from Darden's articles. He was a really good bodybuilder with an amazing chest and rib cage. Yeah, I forgot to ask Ellington when I had him on the show when I was interviewing him what he did for his rib cage, because I've seen quite a few pictures of Ellington Darden with this massive rib cage. So get him back on. I'll have to ask him that. Dale said, from reading Dr. Darden's book over the years, it completely changed my ideas on training. I have 5 vintage Nautilus machines in my home gym. Thank goodness for his books. Shaihan said, bodybuilding wisdom and wisdom. My training is based on the classics. To get a classic physique, you have to train classically. I ran up on his name studying HIT training. I have at least 2 of his books. Another excellent video. You get wisdom from the ones who traveled the path you're trying to travel. Lindsay said, I have read a few of his high-intensity books back in the day. Another great guest and interview, John. Keep them coming. I would love to see you interview Doug Brignoli. Well, I did interview Doug Brignoli probably about a year ago, but I don't think it's on YouTube. So he would have to check the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you can see all the interviews there. Xavier said, that was a fine show. Bring this homie back. Boyle Heights wants more. Johan said, Arthur Jones may have been against steroids, but that was his open stance. Casey Viator was saturated in them. And of course, one would have to wonder where Arthur Jones obtained the necessary funding to house 70 elephants and a multitude of alligators with a gorilla. Where did he get the money for all this stuff? Where did these animals come from? How did he have all these connections? Marco said, a great interview with an outstanding authority on effective weight training and bodybuilding. Keep up the good work, John. Uber Mensch said, oh, I've been waiting for this one. Greg said, old school is the best way. Fantastic show. Angel Oliva said, great interview. Thank you, Mr. Hansen and Dr. Ellington. Robo Stoic said, this was a great interview. I'm hearing these personal accounts is very inspiring. These types of interviews breathe life back into the current tradition. Tony DeFrancisco said, I remember Dr. Ellington Darden, great bodybuilder, great wealth of knowledge. He had an incredible V shape and a huge ribcage. Rohit said, what treats? Bright Boy said, awesome interview with a true legend. Thanks, John, for asking all the right questions that get the stories pulled out into the open. Thanks for not interrupting, Al, and just letting the gentleman talk. Keep them coming, John. Peace. Daniel from California. Greco said, I enjoyed this video and I appreciated your guest, but I was very disappointed when he stated that Dick Butkus was 6 feet tall when seated and that a tape measure adds 3/4 or an inch to your arm size. Yeah, when Dr. Ellington said that Dick Butkus was 6 feet tall when seated, I didn't catch that, I guess, during the interview, and I listened to it after, and I was like, yeah, that's impossible, because Dick Butkus was only 6'4". So I don't know where he got that those stats from, but that was a pretty interesting experiment those guys did with the football players. Rick said, I will remember the both of you for my lifetime. I am 64. Keep up the wonderful work. I've always said Bryan Cranston would be an excellent Arthur Jones. Yeah, he would. That would be a great choice to play Arthur Jones. Bryan Cranston would be awesome. Hopefully they'll one day make a movie of his life. Theron said, I love your interviews. I'm a 66-year-old bodybuilder and trainer. I have competed in many shows local. I got first place in the Carolina Supernatural Men Masters 60 and over on June 16, 2018. I'm a fan of your podcast. All right, thanks for listening. Frank said, wow, what a history lesson. Dan said, another great video, John. It's great hearing from the older legends. Big Bodybuilding Media said, cool video, John. Tony Ruggiero said, does anyone know how old Arthur is in that picture where he's flexing his bicep? His face looks in his 60s, but his body looks in his 30s. Are you telling me Arthur believed that Sergio and Casey were drug-free? And that is it. All right, I got some really good comments. So thanks to all you who commented on my YouTube page. Thanks to you who wrote to me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. and thanks to the comments on Facebook. Hey, if you guys listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review of the show. So you can give me 5 stars and you can also write a review. I would appreciate that if you guys listen to it on Apple Podcasts. I think that's about it. Still got the Mr. Olympia coming up in December, so that'll be here only in a couple more months. I'm planning on going this year. I don't know if anybody out there is going. It's going to be December 17th through the 20th. That weekend will be the weekend right before Christmas. It's going to be at the Planet Hollywood in Vegas, so it's going to be a new location. Dan Solomon, who's a friend of mine, is running it for the second year in a row. Of course, they had a lot of challenges this year with that cold coronavirus, and that's why he moved it all the way to the end of the year so they would have a better chance of doing it. But I think Vegas is open, so they should be able to pull it off. Hopefully, I'll be able to get Dan on the show to talk about the Olympia like we did last year. So that will be coming up. I plan on going to it, like I said, and should be exciting because they got Phil Heath coming back. Phil has won 7 Olympias. So if he wins this one, he's the favorite. This will be win number 8. And then Brandon Curry won it last year, and Brandon was looking really, really huge. So he was a good winner, but I don't know if he'll beat Phil. I think most people are predicting Phil Heath will win his 8th Mr. Olympia. But it all depends on if he has that hernia fix or whatever problem he had with his stomach. And I'm sure Brandon is going to really be improved, which he needs to be, which a Mr. Olympia winner should be. Mr. Olympia winner should always come in improved, because he's going to have the fight of his life if Phil Heath is there. So it should be interesting. I don't think Sean Roden, who won the Mr. Olympia in 2018, I'm sure he will not be back because he's still going through that court problems that he's having, which is a shame because it would be great if all 3 of those guys came back. But it should be a good show. And like I said, I'm planning on going. This will be the 55th annual Mr. Olympia, if you can believe it. Started in 1965. All right. Now we are ready for our interview with Mr. John Taylor, who was the 1980 AAU Teenage Mr. USA, where he beat out Jeff King. Here we go. All right. Welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me this week, Mr. John Taylor, who won the Teenage Mr. USA contest back in 1980. So we're going to talk some old school bodybuilding. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, John. Yourself?
Great, great. Well, John, let's start from the very beginning, like how you got into bodybuilding. What got you into weight training and then decided to compete in bodybuilding?
Sure. So I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I was a wrestler.
Okay.
I started wrestling at an early age, and by about the time I was 13 or 14 years old, I started to see some advantages to the wrestling through form and weight training.
Okay.
And at about that time, there was a former Mr. America who had opened a gym that was in the town next to ours, John DeCola, who had won the 1969 IFBB Mr. America.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
So he opened up, it was called the Apollo Diana Health Spa.
Okay.
And so I kind of segued from doing what I would read in the magazines, which I was, you know, grossly overtraining, still trying to lift weights during wrestling season. And so I met John, and I was pretty much hooked on bodybuilding from the time that I met John.
How old were you then?
I was 14 years old when I met John.
Okay.
And that was back when gyms were split. They were not co-ed at that point. And we had, men had Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and I believe Sunday mornings. Ladies came in at the other days. Wow. So, you know, I would either get a ride over to the gym, because it was, you know, it was before I had a driver's license, either through friends or sometimes my mom would take me over.
Okay.
And John was, he was an outstanding individual to represent the sport. And he was a great mentor, a great coach. He really kind of took me under his wing. And for about 5 years, I trained under John. I worked out with him occasionally.
Wow.
And he was, you know, when going from never meeting a bodybuilder to being first introduced to someone like John DeCola, I don't know if you've seen pictures of John back when he competed, but and he had a very long competition history. But he had arms, they were like balloons. I mean, he had a great overall physique, but I just remember my mouth dropping open the first time I saw him.
Wow.
And John, you know, he was always a proponent of natural bodybuilding.
Was he a natural bodybuilder?
So throughout his career, he, you know, he had remained a natural bodybuilder. In fact, that's why he left the sport in the really after he competed in the 1969 Mr. America.
Yeah,
he felt that to progress to that next level, would require the use of drugs. And it's just, that was just a risk he wasn't willing to take.
Wow. Yeah. And, you're an outstanding physique for being natural.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Symmetry, posing. He did compete several times after that, of course, on a, you know, a natural path, but he was always a big Vince Gironda advocate.
Yeah.
And a lot of the exercises that he, you know, he had us doing were right out of the Vince Gironda playbook.
Okay.
In fact, I never even did a squat until I was probably 19 years old.
Wow.
I always did sissy squats, and they called them bump squats and leg extensions and thing of that nature. But, you know, I was young, so my body responded pretty much to anything that I
mm-hmm.
did.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 5 years, you know, working out under John DiCola. I competed in a number of the local Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware type competitions.
Okay.
And I guess the first big competition that I competed in was the Teenage Mr. Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in 1980. And I won my class. I lost the overall title to a guy by the name of Danny Morrow.
Yeah.
And yeah, Danny Morrow was an outstanding bodybuilder, just loads and loads of potential.
Okay.
You talk about symmetry, he had it all.
Yeah.
And so later that year in 1980, I also competed against Danny again at the Teenage Mr. USA. But what I had done is I went up to Long Island and I trained at Steve Mihalik's Mr. America Body Shop.
Oh, okay.
And so I spent the last 3-4 months training up there prior to the Teenage Mr. USA competition. And it was quite an eye-opening experience for me. We trained under the program, I'm sure you've heard of, Intensity or Insanity.
Yeah.
And I think I'm still recovering from that.
Right.
Yeah, 40 years later.
Now, were you in the, I'm looking at your contest history here. Were you in the 77 Teenage Mr. America?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And the reason that I went in that primarily was because it was being held in Boston.
Okay.
And that was John DiCola's, well, he was from Framingham, Massachusetts.
Right.
But a suburb of Boston. So, you know, I decided I would go up. He kind of encouraged me to compete in that. And it was just, you know, I did it for the experience. It was really good. I believe James Yazenchuk, if I recall correctly, was the winner that year.
Right. So how did you feel going in? Was that your first teenage show?
No, that was not my first teenage show. My first teenage show was actually when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
I entered a competition called the Teenage Mr. Potomac Valley. It was an AAU competition. It was in Washington, D.C. I had no idea what to expect. I won the competition, surprisingly.
Did you really?
Yeah, well, the guy in second place was wearing gym shorts, to give you an indication of the level. But but nonetheless, it was very exciting for me to actually bring home some hardware from my first competition.
How did you look, John, at 15? How did you look?
You know, I'd like to say that I had good genetics for bodybuilding.
Yeah.
I had natural legs. My upper body was probably lagging behind my legs a little bit, but but still fairly well balanced. Because I had been a wrestler, I was pretty lean and fairly muscular. I'd say for my age, muscular. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, John DiCola was helping you back then, right?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Okay. Yeah. Did he go with you to that show?
No, he didn't. He didn't accompany me to the show, but he called me right away afterwards. He was very interested. He helped me put together my posing routine.
Okay. So what was the contest like back then? Because tell our listeners, like, what the contest, this is 77. So that was the year Pumping Iron came out. So how was the show staged and what was that like?
Okay. So in 1977, that would have been the Teenage Mr. America up in Boston.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So you
want to go back to the first competition.
Yeah. When was the first one? Was that 70, like five?
Oh yeah. So the Teenage Mr. Potomac Valley, it was held in a high school gymnasium. Mm-hmm. They had the black curtain drawn behind the makeshift stage.
Okay.
The overhead light was adjusted. I don't even think we had music back then.
No, I don't think so either.
And it was held in conjunction with a weightlifting event.
Really? Okay.
As most were back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I ventured into some of the competitions. If you know the name Bill Stevens, if you've ever come across that, he used to sponsor competitions down in outside of Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
And they were some local shows. I think they even had maybe the Mr. East Coast or something like that. But
okay.
we would hit some of those competitions, and they were always a lot of fun, inspiring. You got to meet people.
Yeah. So how many shows were you doing then? You started at 15, and like how often did you compete?
I would compete in about two or three competitions a year in during the summertime. During the fall and winter, I was, and spring, really, I was focused on wrestling.
Okay, so you were still doing wrestling with the bodybuilding.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I wrestled up through high school.
Oh, wow.
It was kind of a difficult decision for me whether to wrestle in college or not. I opted to focus on bodybuilding.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So how did that work? Because I know wrestling, they wanted you to keep your weight down, and I'm sure you were trying to get bigger with bodybuilding, right?
I was a stubborn individual as a teenager, and the first couple of years in wrestling, when I got into high school wrestling, I was cutting weight, trying to make weight. Mm-hmm. And my senior year, I decided, you know, I don't want to lose size. I'm going to wrestle at 185 pounds. I was really a legitimate 167 pounder, probably without even trying. So, wow. You know, I was bitten by the iron bug. I didn't want to sacrifice any of the hard-earned muscle. So right. I was consuming a lot of calories while all the other guys were cutting weight for the week. I was trying to increase my calories, and I was tipping the scale at about 180 pounds when I could have been as heavy as 185 to wrestle. So I'm sure I could have done much better in wrestling had I wrestled at a weight that would have allowed me to be the most competitive I could have been.
Yeah, I could see that, because I'm sure every year you probably got bigger and bigger.
I did. As a freshman, I was about 120 pounds.
Wow.
So each year I was increasing weight.
Yeah.
And that was, a lot of that was from John's nutritional advice. Mm-hmm. He was very, very big into eating healthy foods and, you know, a typical bodybuilder's diet. Right. Kind of higher on the protein, but pretty well balanced.
Right. Okay. So what other shows did you do then as a teenager? You did that Teenage Mr. Potomac Valley at 15, and then any other ones before you got to like 77?
So I can recall titles such as Teenage Mr. Apollo,
okay.
Teenage Mr. Cumberland Valley. I believe there was a Teenage Mr. East Coast, and I wasn't winning all of those. I won some.
Yeah.
Teenage Mr. Del Marva, I believe, was one of the titles. But
but
those led up to preparation for the Teenage Mr. Pennsylvania, where I was competitive in that. And when I went into the Teenage Mr. America in Boston, it was really something that I went into just for the experience.
Yeah.
I knew that I wouldn't fare real well. In fact, it's kind of a funny story. I listened to your podcast, and by the way,
oh,
I really enjoy
okay.
what you do. I appreciate that. In the height division that I was in at the 1977 America, John Defendis competed, and he was also in that same height class, and I believe
right.
he placed one spot ahead of me.
Okay.
And when you were interviewing him in one of the podcasts, he made the comment that about that Teenage Mr. America show, and he said, "I believe I beat some people who were swimmers." And so I was one of the swimmers that he defended.
That's hilarious.
So yeah, and you know, it's one thing I will say, and John, I think that it might be lost in today's gym environment or bodybuilding, is when we trained at John Nicola's gym, there was so much camaraderie. We just had so much fun. I mean, there were times when we really couldn't even finish a set because we were laughing so hard and just got to
do
practical jokes on each other. It was a great environment.
Yeah, it was. I started training in late 70s too. So I remember like the gyms I was going to like around 1980, 1981.
Yeah.
I don't think people today understand it. They were like little gyms, you know, they were just independently owned smaller gyms.
Right.
Not a ton of equipment like you see today. I imagine the kids that grew up in today's world, they can never even imagine it, because the gyms today are just so big, all that cardio equipment and all that stuff. And all the, they have all these TVs now. I mean, we didn't have any of that stuff back then. You know, we just had this hardcore training.
Yeah,
you're right, it was smaller and you had a great camaraderie. I remember going to the gym, and there was I knew so many guys in the gym, and we'd all like help each other, encourage each other.
Absolutely. And even competitors back in that day, you know, you would really, you know, you would be training against yourself. You want to be as at your best.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you supported those you competed with, and they became friends.
Yeah, I remember the gym I went to, I think I've told the story on the air before, they had a big mirror, and it was in the room that faced like the outside, you know, the sidewalk. So they had a plate glass window, and so the light would come in, and so you'd have really good lighting in that room, you know. So everybody would go in front of that mirror to pose. So I remember like if a guy was getting ready for a show, it was like a week out, and he would go over and he would take his shirt off and pose, the whole gym would come over and watch. You know, you'd have like 30 people standing behind him, and they wouldn't say anything. Everybody was just standing watching, and it was like a show of respect, I guess. Like, you know, this guy's getting ready, and they would just watch him. And then after he got done, people would say, oh, you look great or whatever. But that was – I mean, can you imagine that today? if you took your shirt off, they'd kick you out, you know?
I mean, in my opinion, and maybe, you know, maybe I'm biased because that's the era we grew up in. It just it seems like there's something important that's been lost.
Yeah. It was just that camaraderie was there. And then if somebody competed, like I remember like 30 guys from the gym would all go to the contest to watch this guy and cheer him on. And then afterward, we'd all go out for pizza. It was just, it was great. You know, it's not, that doesn't exist today.
Yeah, right.
What are the other, do you remember any other guys in that Teenage America that you did in 77? Because I was looking, there's some pretty big names in there.
Oh, as I mentioned, James Jazz and Chalk, what was the overall winner?
Yeah.
There were, I off the top of my head, no, I can't remember too many of the other competitors. I mean, I'm sure if I looked at a list, they would, you know, the physiques would come right back to me. But I can tell you that, you know, as few years passed, and from the teenage Mr. Pennsylvania and then the teenage Mr. USA, those were competitive competitions.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And in the teenage Mr. USA, you know, there was, of course, Jeff King was, he won the tall class.
Yeah.
And or maybe they were weight classes back then.
I think they were by 1980. I think it went to weight classes,
Yeah. There was Jean-Paul Guillaume. Yeah. I may not be pronouncing that correctly.
Right.
Danny Morrow competed in that competition. And, of course, there were others as well. But at the same time, we all supported each other. I can remember after I won the teenage Mr. USA, after I was announced the winner, the first thing was, you know, Jeff King and Danny Morrow congratulated me.
Wow.
And it was, and if I didn't win, I would have loved to have seen one of them win. But of course, they both had their phenomenal successes later on, particularly Jeff.
How did you think about Jeff? What did you think about Jeff at that time? Because he was a teenager, but he was huge, right? From the pictures I seen, he looked huge.
He was probably the individual that I was most concerned about going into that competition.
Yeah,
I'd never met him in person. Of course, you know, through the magazines and through Bob Gruskin, I knew quite a bit about Jeff. Jeff had potential written all over him.
Yeah,
you could see that in the competitions. He just at that point probably hadn't mastered the art of peaking for a competition.
Right.
That's probably all it was, because he could have easily walked away with the title had his timing been a little bit on.
So you mentioned Bob Gruskin. When did you meet him, John?
I met Bob Gruskin early on. I met him when I was 15 at one of my first competitions.
Okay.
And he had taken a picture of me and did a little story. There was a newsletter. Maybe it was called the East Coast Bodybuilder, something of that nature. But I mean, we stayed in touch. He would take pictures. Sometimes I would get them in a few months. Sometimes I'd ask him a year later for pictures. Right. But anyways, he was a very good guy. He was very supportive about the sport.
Yeah.
He would, you know, and I would see him. He would usually come to competitions, usually with somebody that he had coached for the various competitions.
Right. What did he say about you when he met you? Did he say you had potential or?
Yeah, he thought that I had very good potential. He once wrote that he thought that I had legs that could pretty much stand up to Tom Platz, which
you know, he's
a little bit of an embellishment there, but nonetheless, he was one of my biggest supporters and advocates. And of course, as a teenager, you're very impressionable, and it felt great to have somebody like that in the sport who was backing you and wanted to see you succeed. And he would give me, you know, some helpful hints and pointers, but it was really John DiCola who I looked up to. You know, it's the thing that I did not do was follow John's advice to remain drug free through competitions.
Yeah.
But you know, back then we used, I guess it really was probably child's play compared to what people do these days. I don't even really know exactly everything they do these days, but I did go down that road, and eventually the ironic thing is that's probably what pulled me away from the sport and had me stop competing. Yeah. I had reached a point where I felt that, you know, I needed to focus on a career. I was becoming kind of disenchanted with some of the politics that I was seeing in the sport.
Okay.
And so I got a master's. Well, I ended up with an undergraduate degree in business management from the University of Maryland, and then a master's degree in exercise science from George Mason University.
Okay.
And I went into an internship program with the Department of the Army in acquisitions, buying things for the Army. And after about 5 years with them, I was hired by the National Institutes of Health to do the same job. And I spent my career with NIH, in specific the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. And I retired as their director of the Office of Acquisitions after 33 years. And
wow.
So it was, you know, I was fortunate to have the job that I did and
yeah.
the people that I did. The day before I retired, the office of the director at NIH asked me if I would stay on as a contractor. And so that's what I'm doing now. That was 2 years ago. And I still work two and a half days a week supporting the Office of Acquisitions at the highest level at NIH.
Wow.
And my wife, Adrienne, has about another year and a couple of months until she retires. So, you know, once she retires, then we'll kind of enter that next chapter of our life. But yeah. right now, it's a nice transition for me from working full time into, and of course, now with everybody working from home, it's a different story.
Yeah. What was NIH again?
The National Institutes of Health. It's
okay.
It's the largest biomedical research institution in the world, really. Hmm. They fund a lot of research and development on all types of diseases, the prevention, treatment of diseases.
Oh, okay.
They have a number of different institutes that focus on specific diseases. As I mentioned, I was with the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute.
Wow, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. You may have heard of the Framingham Heart Study.
Yeah.
A lot of research findings come out of that. That's a program that's been going on probably for over 60 years now. And my guess is they're probably onto their fourth generation of the cohort that was originally recruited for that study. But that's a very, very large study. A lot of important research data has come out of that. And that was funded by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute.
Wow. Okay. So you knew when you decided to walk away from bodybuilding, you stayed with health and exercise because you got exercise science. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, I shifted my focus from bodybuilding to more what I considered to be health. In fact, one of my friends at the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute was really getting into running, and he wanted me to start running with him. I'll say I've never stopped resistance training. I've always kept that up. You know, I just scaled back on the amount that I would do. But we started running, and it started out as, you know, trying to do a 5K run at lunchtime to where we were running marathons together.
Wow.
And I ended up completing eight marathons, and my running career ended one evening when our two dogs started acting up, and I I'd fallen asleep on the couch, and so it was dark. I got up to kind of separate them, and I tripped over them, and I landed on the hardwood floor, and both of my knees, the patellar tendons were severed.
Oh my God.
It was a freaky accident. And, yeah. My wife called me and she said, you know, John, are you coming to bed? And I said, I don't know. And she thought I was just clowning around. So I didn't see her until about 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, no.
And I had tried to stand up, and I pulled myself over to the couch. And when I did get myself in an upright position and let go, I went straight down because there was nothing connecting the quads to the lower.
Yeah. So you had to get both of those repaired. Yeah.
Yeah, so that took quite a bit of physical therapy to recover from, and I never went back to running for anything other than maybe for some, you know, interval training. But
yeah.
But I, to this day, I still enjoy doing some, you know, some cardio and some resistance training.
Yeah.
Just I think once it's in your blood, you just
bitten by the iron bug.
Yeah, right.
John, what do you think about today? I don't know how much you follow the sport of bodybuilding today, and I don't want to rip on these guys today, but obviously, the drug usage has increased tremendously over the last 40 years since you last competed. So what do you think about that in comparison to the way it used to be?
You know, I wouldn't want to take anything away from the effort that these guys put in and their dedication and their passion for the sport. But it's just, it's an appearance that I don't favor. I would say if today's bodybuilding was in vogue at the time I started, I probably wouldn't have done bodybuilding.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that from a few different people.
Yeah, yeah. I really liked the classic physique.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, you know, the times have changed, but it's just not for me. And I started to see a shift also, probably anywhere from the early to mid 80s is where I kind of started to see what they call mass monsters coming into play.
Yeah.
And that was just never appealed to me.
Right. Right. And then it just went on from there and they just got bigger and bigger.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. When you decided to do the drugs as a teenager, I mean, you probably pretty much had to, right, to be competitive. I mean, at that stage, I mean, even though the guys weren't using a lot at the national level, they were still using, right?
Yeah, it was widespread at that time. I don't know that, you know, everybody was. I remember Jean-Paul Guillaume, you know, was natural.
Yeah.
There were probably a few others, but for the most part, to compete at the national level, basically everybody was doing it. And of course, when I went to Steve Mihalik's gym, you know the reputation of that place. So that was an eye-opening experience for me. So not only was the training different than anything I had ever undertaken, he also had me on a 500 to 1,000 calorie diet a day.
Jeez.
And it was, I thought the guy was, I thought he was trying to see whether I'd be around by the time the show came. Right. But you know, I gave it my all. I trained with a guy there by the name of Don Modzelewski. Do you know that name?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember Don Modzelewski.
Yeah. And this guy was a genetic freak and extremely strong. I was never a real strong bodybuilder. I had good endurance, good muscular endurance. But you know, my overall strength level was nothing compared to his. My max was his warm-up. But we trained great together.
He was older than you then, right, John?
Yeah. Don was probably... He had to have been at least 10 to 15 years older than me.
Yeah. I remember he was competing in those IFBB shows in the 70s. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was an atmosphere that in that gym, in Steve Mihalik's gym, that's I think was fairly rare. It was so competitive and people would push and drive. And and Steve Mihalik was a very articulate guy. Mm-hmm. And he could fire you up for the sport. And I mean, he was, I know there's a lot of stories about Steve. I always had a good relationship with Steve. He had me over to his house. And certainly I saw some times where, you know, the not so good side of Steve came to light. But for the most part, I had very good relations with him.
So did he actually train you, John? Was he pushing you and training you?
Yeah. And I worked out with him a couple of times, but it was primarily Don Modzelewski that I worked out with. But okay. Steve would critique my posing. He would critique, you know, go over the diet with me constantly. Yeah, he was a big supporter.
Mm-hmm. So tell me like about one of his workouts. Like what kind of stuff did he have you do?
Well, I'll give you an example. One time we were working legs and Steve worked legs with us and he set up about, I don't know, about 7 or 8 stations. Okay. And nobody else in the gym was allowed to go close to those.
Right.
And we would start out with like 10 sets of leg extensions and not easy sets.
Yeah.
And these were all pretty much pushed to the max.
Right.
And then after you did the leg extensions, you were considered to be warmed up for the real activity. And I gotta tell you, John, I can remember during that one evening when we were working out with Steve, and I was probably 2 months out from the competition and my calories were really low. And I was literally falling down on the floor when we were going through this workout routine. And about the third or fourth time I fell down, I got up. I remember it was like a revelation. I said, you know something, this is like overtime in a wrestling match and you can't beat me. It was kind of a turning point for me. I realized whatever they're going to dish out, you know, I'm going to be around. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to follow their lead. But it was not the type of training that I would advocate for anyone for long term.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that there are some people who really believe in it. Maybe their bodies are such that they can withstand that type of training. I couldn't. I you know, to this day, one of my favorite authors is Clarence Bass.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read his materials. But, you know, the less is more just makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I don't know to that degree, But I really think that doing less and focusing on strength training, which was something I never really did when I was younger, and I kind of regret that. I wish that I had tried the power lifts and developed core strength, but
yeah,
that was what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Clarence Bass was always really concerned with his health. You know, he always had his body fat levels low, but it seemed like even back then he was talking about his blood pressure, his cholesterol, you know, his diet extremely clean. I remember that, you know. Now, when you did that leg workout, what other stations did he have? You started with the
I'm sorry. I skewed away from that. So he had us, we were doing like, I guess they'd call it giant sets. You'd go from regular squats to a leg press to lunges to front squats. And there may have been something else that we were doing, but it was, and the weights were ridiculous. I mean, I would, they would help me up with it, but you know, and I was in squats, you know, I mentioned to you, I didn't start squatting really until I had gotten to Mahalik's gym, but I was able to do 20 to 25 reps with 315 in full squats with my feet under 2x4s, my heels under 2x4s. So I had the endurance. I couldn't go up a whole lot more in weight for a single rep, but we would start out, I mean, with three plates on the bar, and it would just go downhill for me.
Right, right.
I lost when I started training at Steve's gym for the Teenage Mr. USA, I weighed about 220 pounds. And when I stepped on stage, I was 190 pounds.
Jeez.
So that was over the course of a few months. So it was the dieting and the extreme training.
Yeah. Now was Gruskin helping you through that, that year? Cause that was probably your best year, right?
Yeah. We were in touch.
Okay.
But, you know, he always wanted to see me reach whatever potential I could reach and do the best that I could. But I know that he really wanted to see Jeff King or Danny Morrow do the same, reach their potential. Okay. So I would say that, you know, they were his top bodybuilders for the teenage that year.
Okay.
And then there were some others that were probably the close seconds. And I think that maybe I was one of the close seconds.
Yeah. What'd you think about Danny Morrow's physique? I think I'm supposed to interview him next week. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah. Danny had pretty amazing symmetry. I remember that. Very, very good stage presence.
Okay.
I don't know what happened to him after the teenage competitions. I think I recall he competed in one of the organizations like WABA or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he really probably as in terms of potential probably had. Maybe even the most potential of any of the teenage bodybuilders at that
time. Wow, no kidding. Yeah. Yeah, I heard Chris Aceto talking about him before, and he said he was really, really good. And Jeff King, too, when I interviewed Jeff said he was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember a guy in your class named Joe Schroeder? He was from Chicago where I grew up. I was wondering if you remember. He took fifth.
I don't remember the name.
Okay. Yeah, Joe was one of those guys. He was very thick for a teenage bodybuilder, and he trained with Glenn Kinnear. I remember you probably heard of Glenn Kinnear's name. Glenn went on to
work
Mr. America. So he was like Glenn's best friend, but he was very thick and really great genetics, you know, but he just could never come in ripped enough. I don't think he was really, his desire wasn't as great as some other guys, you know what I mean? So I think maybe because it came so easy to him to build that physique, he really would push it as hard, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably took fifth. I was wondering if you remember him.
The name sounds vaguely familiar, but I couldn't put the face to the name.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about guys with potential that maybe didn't take it as seriously as they could, I remember back at Steve Mihalik's gym, there was a kid there by the name of Andy Lopidope. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, he took second to Haney at the Teenage America.
Yeah, yeah. And Andy was, he was kind of hit or miss coming to the gym. You'd see him, you know, he'd be having a hot dog at lunch. He was, he just didn't take it as serious as we thought, you know,
right.
he had tons of potential, but I guess it just wasn't his thing.
Yeah. Whatever happened to him, he just sort of faded away, right?
I don't know. I don't know. And there was another teenage bodybuilder that I competed against also in the 70s, Frank Pantoja.
Mm-hmm.
Is that remember himself?
Yeah, he was a Rory Liedemeyer protege, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
That guy had a great physique. And I mean, he was somebody that I really expected to see, you know, announced as Mr. America someday.
Right, right.
And there were others. The guys that I came across in the competitions, over the years, some of them went on to become Mr. America, Mr. Universe winners. Mm-hmm. Some maybe, not quite that distinguished, but at the same time, they made their mark on the scene. But yeah. I competed against, Doug Brignole, I mentioned John Defendis.
Yeah.
Gosh, there were a host of others. And really, it was very competitive. Just, whoever peaked for that particular competition and what the judges were looking for, would make the difference.
Yeah.
That was the time back when we were kind of transitioning into really the ripped physique was getting a lot of attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Frank Zane kind of led the way to that when he won the Olympia in the late 70s. Then everybody had to be ripped,
Yeah, 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 right, right.
Yeah, those teenage shows in the early 80s were really something to see. I mean, it just seemed like there was a lot of teenagers in America that wanted to be bodybuilders. And it's crazy how that's changed to where it is today. I was going to a lot of shows, local shows, a couple of years ago, and you'd maybe get one or two teenagers. That was it,
Really?
Yeah. It's just completely died off. It doesn't seem like, unless they're going in other divisions, now they have all those different divisions. But I would say in general, the teenage competitors are just not there anymore,
No, that's too bad. Yeah. Now you competed as a teenager in the early 80s, right?
Yeah, from 79 to 82. So I was around during the early 80s too. And speaking of numbers, I remember we had a contest in Illinois called the Teenage Illinois, and they wouldn't hold it in height classes. They held it in age groups. So, mm-hmm. when you're competing as a teenager and you're only 17, you got to go up against 19-year-olds. It's really tough.
Yeah.
So what they would do is they put the 19-year-olds in their own class, and then the 18-year-olds were in another class, and then 14 to 16 was in their own class. So you kind of had a better chance because you were competing against guys your own age.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great idea because they would have anywhere from 80 to 100 teenagers in that show. There was 40 kids in the 17 and 18-year-old class alone. It was amazing. And I tell people that today, and they're like, "And teenage?" I said, because they would hold the teenage on its own that night. They wouldn't even hold it with the open events because there were so many kids in it, so many teenagers.
Right. It was a different game then, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about that Teenage USA. Tell me a little bit more what you remember about that, because, you went in really great shape. And did you feel like you were going to win? I mean, how did the whole day go as you were competing?
I was fairly confident going into that show because I knew that Danny Morrow and I were very close in the Teenage Mr. Pennsylvania competition.
Okay.
And my body had changed quite a bit over the course of 6 months till the Teenage USA arrived. I was a lot leaner, a lot harder.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't know what to expect from Jeff King or some of the others, but I felt like I could hold my own with Danny, depending on what kind of condition he arrived in.
Yeah.
But I didn't know, even, I was on pins and needles, even going into the evening show when the winner was announced. Jean-Paul Guillaume was a very tough competitor.
Yeah.
And he also had potential written all over him.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if he was going to win. I didn't know if I would. I didn't know if Jeff King would win.
Yeah.
I didn't know 100% that I was going to beat Danny Morrow within our class.
Right.
So it was a tremendous, tremendous feeling. But, I've got to say, I did go on 2 years later and won the NPC Collegiate Nationals.
Okay.
And that was the first year that the NPC held the Collegiate Nationals show.
Okay.
I really can't find any records of it. Mm. I don't know if it was actually a sanctioned show or what it was. But that year, Jeff King won the AAU Collegiate Mr. American. I won the NPC Collegiate Nationals.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't long after that I started to become a little disillusioned with the sport because of the increased emphasis on drug use. I was seeing more politics in the sport than I cared for.
Yeah.
And I was also reaching a point in my life where I felt like I needed to make some hard decisions because I didn't want to follow that. I didn't want to continue with drugs at an increased level. I didn't like the idea of spending what I thought at the time was necessary, 6 days a week in the gym. Of course, I feel differently about that now. But there's a saying that true happiness is found in the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that kind of applied because during the magical years of the 70s and early 80s when I was training, the thought of winning the national title just felt like it would be the end all and be all for everything.
Yeah.
And when I won, I was elated. I was proud. I was happy. But there was a little bit of an emptiness to it. So that's why I say it was you know, the pursuit of that happiness was really the best part of it. And plus it was, you know, it was during that time when, you know, as a teenager, you can be very impressionable and you think that the sport is perfect and everything is perfect about it, mm-hmm. and a little naive.
Yeah. With the drugs, was it the health issues were you worried about, John, or were you thinking the way your body looks or that you would have to keep taking them? What was the reason?
I would say it was all of the above. It was, you know, I was concerned about the health effects of taking steroids.
Yeah.
I would see after a competition, I would see some water retention, and I thought this just can't be healthy. And from a moral perspective too, morality, I felt like this just isn't right. It still felt like cheating to me, even though basically everybody at the national level was doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I came from a long history of wrestling, and that just seemed like a truer sport to me. I was still trying to figure out, is bodybuilding really a sport? And I just didn't feel that comfortable about continuing down the same path that I was on. I did compete though. However, I came back in 1985, and I competed in the, I believe it was the WABA WABA. And that was a show I never should have gone into. I kind of entered it half-heartedly, just thinking, I just want to see if I still have the passion for this sport or not. And I went in, I think I took seventh or maybe eighth place in my class. I wasn't nearly ready for the competition, but it was, you know, it was kind of a one last finale to see whether or not I wanted to give this up.
Was that the one in Massachusetts?
It was.
Okay.
I entered the amateur Mr. World.
Okay. Richard Roy won that, right?
Yes. Yeah. He looked phenomenal.
Yeah. Okay. What did your family think about you doing bodybuilding, especially like when you won the Teenage USA?
They were extremely supportive of it. You know, and initially there was reservation because I was, you know, we were a wrestling family and very into the sport.
Yeah.
And the more I got into bodybuilding, the more it seemed like I wasn't giving them 100% for wrestling.
Okay.
So there was a little bit of lackluster support, I'd say, initially. But then they just became my biggest fans.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Yeah. You said you went to college. Did you do that with wrestling, John, or was that just, did you just go to college on your own?
I went to college on my own. I contemplated wrestling in school, but the more and more I thought about it, I thought, you know, something I really want to, I want to try to win the Teenage Mr. USA competition. And I felt like if I continued as wrestling, then that would be a lost dream.
Right. Okay. So when you look back now at that Teenage USA, does it still bring back great memories? You know, like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a time in my life that, you know, you can't replace that.
Right. Right.
And I would say that win or lose, those are just great times.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to a lot of bodybuilders, and they say the same thing. And they'll always have those memories, and it's really special, especially when you win a big show like you did, you know, a national level title, you know.
Yeah, I was fortunate to have that. My timing was just right for that competition.
Yeah,
it's a great sport. You know, it was something that I pursued originally for health and to enhance my wrestling, mm-hmm. and I seemed to add muscle pretty easily. And, you know, being with John after training with him after about a year, he said, you know, why don't you think about a competition? And that's when I did the Teenage Mr. Potomac Valley. And and from that point on, it was a love affair with the iron.
Yeah. So after you won that collegiate, you didn't think about going on to the Mr. America like Jeff did you?
I tell you, I was training for the Junior Nationals.
Okay.
The NPC Junior Nationals that next year. And I was about 2 weeks out from the competition, and I was in what I considered to be the best shape of my life.
Hmm.
It was kind of like the appearance of the Teenage Mr. USA, but about 20 pounds heavier.
Wow.
And I received a call, and they said, you know, John, you're not qualified for this competition.
Oh.
And they said, you know, you can go into a show, a regional qualifier this coming weekend. And I was so off put by that. Here I had won Teenage Mr. USA and the NPC Collegiate Nationals, but I could go in the, you know, Mr. Anthracite competition and qualify.
Right.
I just felt like, you know, something, maybe this is something that is, it's the writing is on the wall for me. Maybe this is a good time for me to step away. So that was that between then and 1985, when I competed in that Mr. World, there was no bodybuilding training.
Okay.
And I think Rich Gaspari won that year.
I was going to say that. Gaspari won that year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, the, I guess the rules were the rules, but at that time I was young, naive, and kind of stubborn, and I just felt like, well, maybe they have somebody in mind that they want to see win.
Yeah.
Because they're letting me know. It was, maybe it was even 10 days before the competition, but I just felt like, you know, something maybe it's stacked against me, and so I'm just not going to pursue it.
Mm.
And in retrospect, I was probably wrong about that. You know, the rules were the rules, but at the time it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I remember back then when the MPC started, they were really strict about who was qualified and who wasn't, because you had a lot of guys coming over from the AAU. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been interesting, though, to see where you would have been like 210 pounds, right? 210 pounds shredded with more muscle, the same condition as a Teenage USA.
Yeah.
Against Rich Gaspari, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, Rich Gaspari, you know, was a phenomenal bodybuilder, but, you know, he hadn't reached the zenith of his career.
No,
he was like 83. So I think
it would have
been
then.
An interesting competition.
Yeah. David Hawk was in that show too, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember David Hawk and Rich Gaspari being competitors in that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right, John. Well, thanks for telling us your story about the bodybuilding in the early days and your Teenage Mr. USA win. That was great stuff. So you're basically just working now. You retired, but you're still working, and you're planning on looking at retirement, and are you and your wife traveling and stuff in a couple of years, huh?
Yeah, exactly. We one of the hobbies that I have is woodworking and timber frame building, and my wife and I built a timber frame cabin over in West Virginia. We love to hike, and we love going out with our dogs. We have rescue dogs.
Yeah.
And so we built a timber frame cabin.
Oh,
and
cool.
We do spend a lot of weekends out there. And now with COVID, we have high speed internet service out there so that, you know, we'll work from out there as well.
Okay.
And that pretty much takes up a lot of our time is, between here and I live in Northern Virginia, but between here and going out to the cabin.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, John. Well, it was great meeting you, and thanks again for your story and telling us all about those early days of bodybuilding. And I'll tell Danny Morrow you said hi when I talk to him next week.
please do. And it was a pleasure meeting you, John. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks, John.
Take care.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Mr. John Taylor for joining us for that interview. Next week, hopefully, we will have another great teenage bodybuilder from the 1980s, Dan Morrow, who John just mentioned in the interview. We were supposed to have him on the show coming up next week, so keep your fingers crossed for that. Thanks to Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to all of you who helped contribute to the show on our Patreon page, which is right on my website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com. Go in the upper right-hand corner, and if you want to help contribute to the show, I would really, really appreciate that. And if you want to get in shape this year before it's over, please go to my website, johnhansonfitness.com, and start the Fall Fitness Challenge, which starts this week and will end at the very end of the year, right before Christmas. So in 12 weeks, you guys will totally change your body. So go to johnhansonfitness.com, my website, and you can register right there to see more of you guys join that. We've got quite a few people already, and it's going to be one of the best challenges yet this year. All right, so that is it for the show. We will be back next week with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Keep training hard out there, guys. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Take care.